Morning, everyone. Welcome back to Parsha Explorations for Parshas Pekudei. Always a pleasure to learn with you on a Thursday morning. I should really mention the sponsors. Let me just do that briefly. Here we go. Always want to do that when I can. Just one second.
You.
I mentioned those. Do you hear me?
I get
I
kind of
do.
see you.
Excellent. Okay.
I kind
So
of
I
see you.
want to thank our sponsors for this week. Month of Learning is sponsored by Judy Singer in memory of her father, Harav Elimelech, and Mordechai Yehuda Olav HaShalom, and Judy's children and grandchildren in honor of Judy's big upcoming birthday. And I think that's it for the sponsors. So we wish Judy a happy birthday. And the Week of Learning, excuse me. The Week of Learning is sponsored by Phil and Joe Eisenman, Phyllis and Joe Eisenman, in memory of Joe's father, Barnett Eisenman, Eliezer Dov ben Yisrael Zev, Alav Shalom, and also Deborah and Baruch Littman,
The main
in
author.
memory of Baruch's mother, Peggy Littman, Alav Shalom. Hashem should have an aliyah. May the memories be for a blessing, and our learning should give that there is Shammas Nachas and Gan Eden. All right. Pekudei, at first glance, seems a bit boring. It's a bit repetitive. It's a lot of numbers. We've read about the Mishkan for so many weeks, but I think to really appreciate it, you got to get in the minds of the Jewish people who have been working for months on end, nonstop, to prepare the kelim, to prepare the Big Day Kahuna. And in Pekudei, it all is finished. Their work is done. And they're ready to finally start with the Mishkan. You have to imagine how exciting that was. And let's try to emphasize that as we learn together. I want to begin with the first pasuk. The very beginning of our parsha begins with what seems like an accounting, meaning to say the Jewish people donated all sorts of valuables, gold, silver, wool, linen, etc., so that Bezalel and all those who work with him could build the Mishkan. And the Torah tells you how much gold, how much silver, and also generally what those materials were used for. The question is, why is any of this necessary? Why was it important for the Torah to tell us how much gold and silver was donated, and that what that gold and silver was used for? We can use our imagination. We can sort of do the math ourselves. If everybody gave chatzi shekel, how many people were there? How much silver was that, etc.? Which utensils were described that they were made from silver? That must have been what the silver went to. What's the purpose of detailing how much of each material was donated and the per and what all of those was used for? So two ideas here I wanted to share with you. The first comes from the Ralbag, and the Ralbag says a very basic lesson. You always have to make sure that you come across as honest and as yashar, as straightforward. And that you nothing, there is not no funny business, no money went to Moshe's personal bank account. And it's really remarkable that even someone like Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Navi that ever lived, and somebody who was clearly appointed by the Ribono Sha'olam for this task to encourage the Jewish people to build the Mishkan, even he made an effort to make an accounting of every single thing that was given to him. And the Rabbag tells us, we learn from this, that anybody who is appointed to a position by the community should make sure that they make an accounting of every single donation that they receive, and that they can tell the people who made those donations where those funds went for, so that they can be good and clean in the eyes of God and in the eyes of Israel. So the first approach then is that the purpose of this cheshbon is talking about the importance of transparency and honesty. What a lesson, even from Moshe Rabbeinu, the Adon HaNavim, the greatest prophet, clearly got instructions from the Ribono Shel Olam himself. He wasn't absolved of this obligation to be transparent. All the more so, we can all take a step when we have the opportunity to show that we are being honest and there's no funny business going on. One lesson from the Ralbag. Abarbanel is a very different approach. In fact, the Abarbanel says that it's really not the Ralbag's approach, because everybody was sort of relying on these people. There wasn't necessarily an exact accounting of how much gold and how much silver and who gave what and what was it used for. That's what the Abarbanel argues. You don't find that. So, what is the purpose of this counting? Says the Abar Manel, think about what happened in Vayakel. Moshe Rabbeinu calls for donations, and everybody starts giving. We spoke about that last week. And the women give their gold and their silver and their jewelry, and their husbands come along and they donate their talents and their time and their valuables. And at some point, what happens? The people who are in charge of getting all the materials say to Moshe, "Hey, Moshe, that's enough. That's enough. We have enough. We have enough materials." And Moshe blows a shofar and he sends a message to the community, "You don't need to give anymore." Says the Abarbanel, lest one might think, "Wait a minute. No way. No way. No way." If they were told to stop giving, there is no way that all the donations actually were sufficient to supply the necessary materials for as expensive a construction project as Mishkan. Certainly, there's no way that they got enough. How can Moshe possibly have told the Jewish people to stop giving? Therefore, says the Abar Manel, at the beginning of Pekudei, we prove the exact opposite. The Torah goes through all the gold and all the silver and tells you it was enough for all the different utensils and for all the big day kahuna and for all the very precious materials that the Jews needed to accumulate and use to construct the Mishkan and all the accessories. Even though Hashem told the Jews to stop, they gave more than enough. And I think that's a really important point to keep in mind as we read Pekudei, because part of Pekudei is to demonstrate how unbelievable the construction project of the Mishkan was, how the Jews really excelled at every aspect of the Binyan HaMishkan, from the donating to the crafting to the whole process. The Jews passed with flying colors. And that's part of the reason we have this accounting. So that's two approaches from the Abar Banel and from the Ralbag for why do we have this count. Moving to the very first words in our Parsha this Shabbos, the Torah says, "Ele pikudei ha-mishkan, mishkan ha-edus." These are the countings or the numbers of the Mishkan of Testimony. So, 2 points to make with this formulation. First, most obviously, the word Mishkan is repeated seemingly unnecessarily. Pekudei ha-Mishkan, Mishkan ha-Edus. It could have simply said Pekudei Mishkan ha-Edus. Now, some of us say that you might have got confused with another Mishkan, a later Mishkan, but it seems a bit problematic why we would need to repeat the word Mishkan twice. And secondly, what is the meaning of Mishkan Ha'edus? Mishkan Ha'edus meaning the Mishkan of testimony. In what sense does the Mishkan testify? So we have Rashi at the very beginning of our Parsha this week. Rashi first says, why is it that the word Mishkan is repeated twice? Says Rashi, the word Mishkan is similar also to the word Mashkon. And Mashkon is a collateral. When something is taken from its rightful owner to be returned at a later date, says Rashi in the name of Chazal, that Mishkan is repeated twice as a hint to the Beis Hamikdash, which was Nismashkein Shnei Pa'amin, which was confiscated and taken as a collateral 2 times from our people with the 2 destructions of the first and second Batei Mikdashos. So that's Mishkan, Mishkan. Then Rashi adds that why is it Eidos? So while many Mefarshim say that the Eidos refers to the Luchos HaEidos, which means the tablets of testimony which testify to the covenant between Hashem and the Jewish people, Rashi says that the Eidos was that Hishra Shchinaso Besocham, Hashem allowed his divine presence to reside amongst Klal Yisrael, which was a testimony to the fact that Hashem had forgiven them for the Chet HaEgel, that Hashem was willing to live amongst Klal Yisrael, attested to the fact that he had allowed them to atone for the sin of the Chet HaEgel. Maharal has 2 questions and 2 approaches I wanted to share with you. First, why would we reference the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash now? Meaning, if the point of Mishkan is simply to say that at a later time in our history, the 2 other temples that for which were dedicated to the service of God would ultimately be destroyed, that could have been hinted to at any point in the description of the Mishkan? Why was it that clarify now in describing all the donations and how everything was counted up and all the gold and silver was counted up? Why at this point, of all points? Says the Maharal something very interesting. Maharal says and relates it to a Medrash. The Medrash notes that the Mishkan, Moshe's Mishkan, was ultimately destroyed. We don't have the Moshe's Mishkan. We also don't have the two Batei Mikdashos. Why is that so? Because it was bipumbi. It was public. It was very open. It was very out there. Everybody brought their gold, their silver. It was for everyone to see. It was counted up. Look at all the things we are donating to the Mikdash. Now, while that is on the one hand very admirable that people were willing to donate their valuables to the Mikdash, says the Maharal, there is something that it makes a public demonstration a bit vulnerable. Things that are done in public for everyone to see often do not last the test of time. The greatest demonstration of this is the two luchos. The first luchos, the first two tablets that Hashem gave to the Jewish people at Mount Har Sinai with the thunder and the lightning and the fire, were shattered. The second luchos, which Moshe Rabbeinu brought down in private, those are the ones that last. So says the Maharal, the reason that the Beis HaMikdash was ultimately destroyed was because of the public nature of it. It's an idea of ayin hara, things that are public, that are sort of shown off, are susceptible ultimately to be destroyed. And so at this moment, when the Jews were gathering all the gold and all the silver, and it was counted up and it was displayed for everybody to see, while that had a certain level of transparency to it, it also made the Mikdash and the Mishkan vulnerable. And so that's why that is emphasized at this point. Just a really fascinating idea, which is to say that if certainly something as dignified and as admirable a project as the Mikdash and the Mishkan and the Luchos were destroyed ultimately, at least partially, because of the public nature of those ceremonies. So that certainly teaches us that something that can be kept private doesn't need to be shown off for everyone to know how wonderful you are, or how generous you are, or how wealthy you are, should be kept private. Because when things get public, they become vulnerable often. And we know many of the most generous people are often not the ones who are the first to say, look how much money I gave, look how much gold I gave, look how much silver I gave. They like to do things in private, but sinna, I want to help out, but not everybody needs to know about it. That is one lesson we can take from Mishkan Ha'edus. What about this notion of testimony? Ask the Maharal. It's interesting. Most Mefarshim say that the Eidos was because Hashem gave the Jewish people the Torah, the Luchos HaEidos. And indeed, even after the Ribono Sheolam, excuse me, even after Klal Yisrael did the Chet HaEgel and the first Luchos were broken, he gave them a second pair of Luchos. Ask the Maharal, why does Rashi say that the testimony that the Jewish people were forgiven was the fact that Hashem agreed to live among them? Why not the fact that he gave them the second luchos, that he gave them the second pair of tablets? That should be the testimony that Hashem had forgiven the Jewish people, that he gave them the Torah again. Why emphasize this notion of the fact that the Shechina was Shoreh betoch Klal Yisrael? Two ideas by the Maharal. First, when Hashem gave the Jewish people the Torah, famous Chazal, under what sort of conditions did he give them the Torah? So the rabbis tell us, Kafa aleihem har kegiges. He held the mountain of Har Sinai over the Jewish people and said, either accept this or shan teig for aschem. There will be your burial. So while as great as the tablets were, as great as the luchos were, they were given to the Jewish people originally, in a certain sense, under duress. That is not the sort of testimony to a relationship. To attest to a forgiveness, a coming together of Hashem and the Jewish people, you need a declaration of love. And that was what the Shechina Shoreh B'tocha meant that because the Jewish people had been so generous and so wonderful in the way that they built the Mishkan, that Hashem had agreed to live among them. You don't agree to live among somebody who you can't stand, who you're distant from, who you're still angry at, because of the Chet HaEgel. That Hashem agreed to reside amongst the Jewish people, that is the testimony that he still loved the Jewish people and he wanted to live among them. And the Maharal adds, if the Chet HaEgel is compared to a certain type of infidelity that the Jews had in some level committed avodah zarah, committed idolatry, worship this golden calf, and that is being unfaithful to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the antidote to that is that Hashem says, I'm willing to live among you again. And that wasn't really you. And the Maharal makes the comment, it was really the Erev Rav, these mixtures of peoples among the Jewish people who had instigated the sin of the golden calf, but it wasn't really a Klal Yisrael. So the fact that Hashem is willing to live among them again, that indicates that the relationship has been repaired. And on a very human level, it's one thing to give someone a gift. You know, you're upset at someone, you get into some sort of disagreement. It's a nice gesture to give them something, to do something, to show you care. But the relationship's not whole until you're are willing to have to be with them again, to spend time with them again, to go somewhere and spend time and have a conversation, to renew the friendship. That is a real demonstration of a repairing of a relationship more than giving anything, even of real value, could ever demonstrate. That's the idea of the Maharal based on this Rashi of what was the Eidos of the Mishkan. Moving on to a few points from the Avar Benel in the process of building the Mishkan. So it's very interesting. And again, I think we have to get into the Jewish people's minds to appreciate Pekudei. The Torah first describes, as I mentioned, all the different materials that were donated and the counting of those materials. And then, after that description, it describes how the Jewish people, Bezalel, and many people with him made all the things that were described earlier, and particularly in Pekudei, how they made the big day kahuna. Vayakal describes the construction of the utensils of the Mishkan, and Pekudei describes the putting together of the big day kahuna, the priestly garments for Aaron and his sons. So, two different points to make about this from the Barbanel that I found insightful. First, if you look at the description of the crafting of these big day kahuna, the way they begin differs from clothing to clothing, beged to beged. Meaning to say, sometimes it says vayas. Vayas means, and he made. That's in the singular, which Abarbanel argues refers to Bezalel. Bezalel was the head of this construction project. He was the head engineer. So if he made it, it means it's Bezalel. Various other times it says Vayasu or Vayiraku, that they did it all together. Why sometimes is it singular, while sometimes it is plural? It's hard to understand. So Abarbanel makes the point that Bezalel was personally involved in all the utensils, but that doesn't mean he was the only one to do all the different steps that were necessary to make the big kahuna. But I wanted to focus on one comment he makes in particular. The very last of the big day kahuna that is described is the tzitz. In Perek Lamed Tes Pasuk Lamed, the very last thing described is Vayasu et tzitz nezer hakodesh zav tahor. They made the tzitz, the holy crown, out of pure gold. It is interesting that that required so many people. Vayasu, the tzitz was very little, right? I can't even imagine that too many people could have possibly worked at it at the same time. So why would that be in plural? Says Bezalel something interesting. Excuse me. Says the Barbanel something interesting. The tzitz was the very last thing that the Jewish people made together, and the very first thing that was made was the curtains or the coverings of the Mishkan, the Yerios. Both of those are described in plural. So the Barbanel says the very first thing that was constructed and the very last thing that was constructed are both in plural, vayasu, to say that while there were particular people who were involved in every every kli and every beged. And while Bezalel was the head engineer, but all the Jewish people ultimately had a chelek, a portion in the Mishkan. It was everyone's project. It was the project of Klal Yisrael. Therefore, the very last and the very first projects are both described with Vayasu, and they made in plural to show everyone had an equal portion in the construction of the Mishkan. One more point about this construction regarding what happens right afterward. Really fascinating point. And again, you have to get into the Jewish people's heads. After they make all these things, in Parak Lama Tes, Pasuk Lama Gimel, it describes how the Jewish people brought everything, that they all the things they had crafted, all the kelim, all the big day kahuna, they gathered them and they brought them to Moshe. You look, take a look at Parak Lama Tes, Pasuk Lama Gimel, Vayaviu Es HaMishkan al Moshe. They brought the Mishkan to Moshe. And it says everything that they brought. They brought this, they brought that, they brought that. They bought the bars. And they brought the beams, and they brought the coverings, and they brought the curtains, and the Aron, and the Shulchan, and the Big Tikkun, etc. Why is that necessary? We've already described all of the utensils and all of the Big Tikkun at length numerous times. It should simply say, and they brought everything to Moshe. No, it goes through every single thing that they brought. So the Barbanel has a really interesting explanation. He says, we have to think about how this worked. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai. He gives the Jewish people instructions, and they get right to it. Where did they do all the work? Says the Barbanel, at their tents, near their residences. You know, the people who were working on the Beit HaKahuna were at their home working at the Beit HaKahuna, and the people who were making the kelim were at their houses working at the kelim, etc., etc., etc. Who was to make sure that everything was done correctly? Now, I'm sure Bezalel, you know, went from tent to tent and there was some oversight involved, but Moshe Rabbeinu was not. Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, was Michutz LaMachaneh. He had distanced himself from the people. So you would think, you know, you want something done right, you got to do it yourself. What are the chances that the Jews actually fulfilled all of Moshe Rabbeinu's instructions and that the Kelim and the Big Tikkun were constructed properly? Says the Torah, they brought everything to Moshe. They brought every single thing that he asked them to make, and Moshe investigated all of it, and it was all 100% the way that Hashem had commanded him to design. And when Moshe saw that, that's when the Torah says, "Vayevarech osa Moshe." Moshe gave them a blessing that the Shechina should be shorah b'maaseh yadeichem, and he was shocked. Unbelievable. What an incredible feat, how all the Jewish people had gotten these instructions and done them on their own and built the Mishkan and the Kelim, and everything was the way it was supposed to be. There must have been some divine intervention, divine inspiration allowing them to do this, says Moshe Rabbeinu. That is unbelievable. What incredible love, what incredible passion and dedication. May Hashem Shechina dwell in your handiwork, b'maaseh yadeichem. Shetishra Shechina b'maaseh yadeichem. So this whole parsha, the crafting, the counting, it's all a testament to the love and passion the Jewish people had for the Ribono Sha'olam in building this Mishkan, and that is what caused Hashem to bless their handiwork. Beautiful idea from the Abarbanel. I'll leave you with the very end of Sefer Shemos. And just one more idea from the Abarbanel, which we mentioned before, but I want to highlight one more time. At the very end of our parsha, it's all finished. The Mishkan has been constructed. They put it up. They put everything where it's supposed to be. They put the curtain where it's supposed to be, and the Aron, and the Menorah, and the Shulchan, and the Mizbeach HaZahav, and the walls of the Mishkan, and the covers over the Mishkan, and the Kior, and the outer Mizbeach, and the Chatzer, and the fence around it. Everything is ready to go. And there's a beautiful description of how Moshe Rabbeinu does the avodah, does everything that needs to be done. He puts everything where it needs to be. He lights the candles. And then after all that is, he brings the karbanos, he brings the olah, the mincha, the ketores. And after everything is done, The Torah says, "Vayachas ha'ononas ohel moed, ukevor Hashem mali es ha'mishkan." The cloud filled the tent of meeting, and Hashem's glory filled the Mishkan. Belo yachol Moshe lavo al ohel moed ki shachan alav ha'anon ukevor Hashem mali es ha'mishkan. Moshe couldn't even enter into the ohel moed because the cloud had resided over it, and the glory of Hashem filled the Mishkan. Wherever, whenever the cloud of glory went from above the Mishkan, the Jews followed it. If they didn't go, they didn't go anywhere, and they followed the cloud of God throughout the desert. What is the meaning of this ending, emphasizing this cloud of glory, how it resided over the Mishkan, how it directed the Jewish people wherever they went? So the Abarbanel has a really beautiful idea that many Mepharshim touch on, that we focused on many times, and that is to say, the Mishkan, the construction of the Mishkan, is intended to be parallel to Bria Shemayim Va'aretz, to Bria Sa'olam, to Hashem's creating of the world itself. Firstly, just on a very simple level, we have the same Bayas, Bayas, Bayas. Hashem makes all these different things during the Sheshes and Mebereshes, and the Jewish people make all the different Kalim during the construction of the Mishkan. You also have Batechal Kol HaMilacha. All the work was completed at the end of the 6 days of Bereshit. It's Vayechulu Hashemayim Va'aretz Achol Tzivaam. And the Medrash really emphasizes this sort of comparison, that there are all sorts of similarities, that our Hashem Shechina dwells in the Mishkan just as it dwells in this world. So just for instance, let me point out a few of them to you. You have a paroches, behedila ha-paroches lachem, the curtain which separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is parallel to vayavdel Elokim, that Hashem separated various things in the Sheshes Mebereshis. He separated between the upper waters and lower waters, so the same idea of havdalah. You have the kior nechoshes, the washing basin where water was placed. It's similar, obviously, to the fact that in the Sheshes Mebereshis, Hashem creates the water, allows the water to gather in certain places to make the ocean. You have the Maoros, the luminaries in creation. You have the menorah, which is also a Maor, also a source of light. You have the Kruvim, the angels, which spread their wings over the Mishkan. And that's also similar. That's similar to the Ofi Ofeth, the birds that were made during Sheshes and Mebereshis, etc., etc., etc. Says the Barbanel as follows: what is the Torah telling us at the end of this description of the Mishkan? What made the Mishkan special, as beautiful of a building as it was, as wonderful as it was the fact that Kvod Hashem Mali as a Mishkan, that in this place where the Jews created, in this residence, that Hashem Shechina resided there, and that you walked into the Mishkan, you knew Hashem was there. Says the Abarbanel, it's the same way with the world, even if it is not as evident. What makes the world a special place, what keeps the world going, what gives it life, what makes the sky and the birds, is Hashem's presence. And just as the Jews so evidently felt the Kavod Hashem and the Anon while they were in the Mishkan, so we ought to try to get in touch with Hashem's presence in our world as well. Just as the Jews would go and travel and stop wherever the Anon went, so too, by Hashem's direction, wherever he tells us to go, we ought to follow his directions as well. So this very last description of how the Jews' world was complete, they had made the Mishkan, they made this world for Hashem to reside in. That's obviously why we have the notion that Shabbos is based on the Mishkan. We don't do on Shabbos what the Jews did in building the Mishkan, because the Shabbos is about how Hashem created the world. The Mishkan was a world for the Ribono Shel Olam. It's a parallel there. But just as we followed Hashem everywhere he went in the Midbar, we ought to follow Hashem wherever he has us go, whatever he tells us to do in our world as well. So just a brief review of what we discussed this morning. We talked about the different reasons for the accounting of all the materials, the gold, the silver, the wool, either for transparency or to show that although the Jews were told to stop giving, they had more than enough to supply for everything in the Mishkan. We talked about the Roskia, about Mishkan and Eidos, the importance of keeping things private, and the importance of restoring relationships by doing just that, not just by giving something to someone, but by spending time with them and living among them. We spoke about how all the Jews contributed to the construction of the Mishkan, and therefore the very first and last thing that was constructed is Vayasu. They all did it together, even though the tzitz was so small. And we ended with this image of the Kavod Hashem Aliyas HaMishkan. God's glory fills the Mishkan, certainly, but God's glory also fills this world as well, and it's up to us to try to sense it. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. Always a pleasure to learn with you. Wishing you a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Very well.